Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Today we are diving ever deeper into that sweet nectarian ocean known as the Srimad Bhagavatam, fourth canto, chapter number 24, text number 56, chanting the song sung by Lord Shiva. Yatra Nirvishtam
Aranam
Krita Anta
Na
Abhimanyate
Vishvam
Vidvamshayan
Virya
Sharya Vispurjita Bruva. Yatra nirvash yatra nirvishtam maranam
yatra nirvishtam maranam
kritanto nabhimanyate
kritanto nabhimanyate
vishvam vidvamshayan virya Sharya Vishpurjita Bruva Yatra Nirvishtam Maranam Kritanto Nabhimanyate Vishvam Vidavam Vishvam vidvamshayan virya
Vishvam vidvamshayan virya
Sharya vishpurjita bruva
Sharya vishpurjita bruva
Yatra nirvishtam maranam
Yatra nirvishtam maranam
Kritanto nabhimanyate
Kritanto nabhimanyate
Vishvam vid Vangshayan virya
Vishvam vidvamshayan virya
Sharya vishpurjita bruva
Sharya vishpurjita bruva
Simply by expansion of his eyebrows, invincible time personified can immediately vanquish the entire universe. However, formidable time does not approach the devotee who has taken complete shelter at your lotus feet. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita 10:34, it is said that the Lord, in the shape and form of death, destroys all a person's possessions. Mrityu sarva harash chaham. I am all devouring death. The Lord, in the shape of death, takes away everything that is created by the conditioned soul. Everything in this material world is subject to perish in due course of time. However, all the strength of time cannot hamper the activities of a devotee. For a devotee takes complete shelter under the lotus feet of the Lord. For this reason only is a devotee free from formidable time. All the activities of the karmis and jnanis, which have no touch of devotional service, are spoiled in due course of time. The material success of the karmis is destined to be destroyed. Similarly, the impersonal realization attained by the jnanis is also destroyed in the course of time. Avruyat krishchena parampadam tatha Patam tyajo nadrita yushman angrayana. Bhagavatam 10.2.32. To say nothing of the karmis, the jnanis undergo severe austerities to attain the impersonal brahmajyoti because they do not find the lotus feet of the Lord. They fall down again into this material existence. Unless one is fully situated in unalloyed devotional service, there is no guarantee of liberation. Even if one is elevated to the heavenly planets or to the impersonal Brahman effulgence, a devotee's achievement, however, is never lost by the influence of time. Even if a devotee cannot completely execute devotional service, in his next life, he begins from the point from where he left off. Such an opportunity is not given to karmis and jnanis whose achievements are destroyed. The bhakta's achievement is never destroyed, but it goes on perpetually, be it complete or incomplete. This is the verdict of all Vedic literatures. Suchinam Shimatam Gehe Yoga Brashto Vijayate. If one is unable to complete the process of Bhakti Yoga, he is given a chance in his next life to take birth in a pure family of devotees or in a rich family. In such families, a person can have a good opportunity to further progress in devotional service. When Yamaraj, the superintendent of death, was instructing his assistants, he told them not to approach the devotees. The devotees should be offered respect, he said, but do not go near them. And thus, the devotees of the Lord are not under the jurisdiction of Yamaraj. Yamaraj is a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he controls the death of every living entity. Yet he has nothing to do with the devotees. Simply by blinking his eyes, time personified can destroy the entire causing manifestation, but he has nothing to do with the devotee. In other words, devotional service which is rendered by the devotee in this lifetime can never be destroyed by time. Such spiritual assets remain unchanged, being beyond the influence of time. Om Jnana Timaram Dasha Gnanjana Shalakayam Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. As it is often said, time and tide wait for no man. And it is also said that castles made of sand are washed into the sea. So the difference between the devotee, the karmi, and the jnani is that the castle made by the devotee is not made of sand. His castle is made of bhakti, and it is never washed away by the sea. The karmi, he is constructing a castle made of sand, which is washed away by the sea of time. And the jnani also. Even though what he's doing is more subtle, it is also eroded by the influence of time, because even though he can temporarily fly in the sky of Brahman by dint of his penances and austerities, because he has no tendency to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, after some time, when his pious activities or the results of his pious activities are exhausted, then he falls down again into material existence. Prabhupada gives the example. You can take one airplane and you can fly in the sky, but then after some time you run out of gas and you have to come down. So it is artificial position, you see, for the jnani to enter into Brahman is very artificial position. He cannot maintain. Just like someone may become a scuba diver, you see. They may enter into the ocean with a scuba tank, a wetsuit, fins, a mask. But they cannot remain there forever. It is artificial for them. They are taking help of their oxygen tank. In that way they can remain for some time in the ocean. But the devotee, you see, he becomes a fish. He takes up the natural habitation in that environment. So the jnani may artificially enter the spiritual world, but after some time he must leave it. And he can never get the shelter of any planet there. He can only float in the spiritual sky for some time. So whether you're a karmi, accumulating assets in this material world, trying to enjoy your senses, or you're saying this world is false and I want to become God. In either case, your position of so-called success in material existence or in Brahman will be here today and gone tomorrow. So if we want actual lasting happiness, we must come to this platform of bhakti, Krishna consciousness. Of course, there are two kinds of Krishna consciousness. There is anukul and pratikul. There is the Krishna consciousness of the devotee, and there is the Krishna consciousness of Kamsa. You see, we do not want that type of Krishna consciousness. We want anukul Krishna consciousness, not pratikul. The Krishna consciousness of Kamsa. Of course, even the Krishna consciousness of Kamsa, Pratikul, it also gives benefit. When the demons are killed by Krishna, they get liberation. Sometimes they even get Sarupya liberation. They go to the Vaikuntha realm and they get a four-armed form. Actually, sometimes they get Sarupya liberation. Generally, they get impersonal liberation, which is only temporary. So why take a chance of being a demon when you're most likely just going to get Sayujya? Of course, you have to be a very, very big demon, big enough to directly fight with Krishna. You're just an ordinary demon like the ones that walk up and down the street here in Heidelberg, then you know, you won't get the chance to directly fight with Krishna and get Sayujya Mukti. So the best thing, the surest thing, is become a devotee. That's the best bet. That's a sure bet. If you like to gamble, then make this gamble that you give this, you put your life on the table. You bet this life. You gamble this entire life. Give this entire life to Krishna. And then see what is the result. Actually, there's no loss. We have been trying to enjoy in so many lifetimes our senses, trying to enjoy in the company of society, friendship and love, family, friends. We have tried this mundane enjoyment for how many lifetimes? We cannot even count. As a dog, we tried it. As a monkey, you know, as a demigod, as an ant, as a human being, we have tried again and again and again to be satisfied in this material existence. And where has it gotten us? Where has it got? Another damn material body that gets sick, old, and dies. That's another problem, another problematic situation. So if we keep doing what we've always been doing, we're going to get what we've always gotten. Is it enough? Are you satisfied? Are you satisfied with your existence in this material world? If you're not, then you better find out something else to do than what you've been doing all these millions of lifetimes, namely sense gratification. You better find out something else to do. And at least you can try this Krishna consciousness. Give it one lifetime. You've tried everything else. You're not satisfied. So now try Krishna consciousness. Give one life in the service of Krishna completely, totally, wholly. And if that doesn't satisfy you, well, you can come back again and become a dog or a monkey or whatever you like in this material world. A bird, a tree here on the hill, whatever you like, you can become. But try giving this one lifetime to Krishna. This is intelligent. Since you've tried every other species that exists within the 8,400,000 species, why not try? And there are exactly 8,400,000 species. The scientists have not caught up yet with the Vedas. It's explicitly stated in the Vishnu Purana, 8,400,000 species, and it breaks it down. 900,000 of this, it breaks it down. 3 million of this, it breaks it down into the full details, into the categories in the Vishnu Purana. So anyway, we have been through this precise number, 8,400,000 species, and we're not happy. Let's face it, who is happy among us here in this room? Who is really happy with our material existence? Our only happiness is that we have taken to Krishna consciousness. Besides that, we have no real happiness in this world. None. There was an illusion of happiness there, but it was simply an illusion. If you need some money and I give you counterfeit money, you may feel very satisfied, but when you try to cash it in, that how we had that experience the last time we were leaving India, we thought, oh, we will turn our rupees into US dollars. And we gave a stack of rupee notes, 500 rupee notes, and they pulled out one 500 rupee note and they said, this is counterfeit. Not going to give you anything for this note. You can have it back. So it appeared to be a very nice rupee note. But to the eye of the trained observer, you see, it was counterfeit. So this material world may appear to be a very, very enjoyable place. But to the eye of a trained observer, one who is learned in the Vedic wisdom, he knows, oh, it is counterfeit. There is no real enjoyment here. It is useless. Simply useless scrap of paper, that's all. Fit for being thrown in the trash can, that's all. So, do you want to continue in this trash can existence? What is your answer? Do you want to continue in the trash can existence? Then we have to take shelter of Krishna. As advised by Lord Shiva, the greatest of all Vaishnavas, we have to get out of this material tabernacle, this material quagmire. So how do we do that? Krishna very kindly comes. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. He kindly comes once in every day of Brahma to deliver this knowledge and to give us the opportunity to take shelter of his lotus feet. And when he is not personally present, well, he sends his representative, the spiritual master, who acts on his behalf as his empowered agent. He appears before us in the form of the spiritual master. The full potency, the full delivering potency of Krishna is present in the form of the spiritual master. We can be Arjuna hearing directly, of course we can't be, but even if we were Arjuna hearing directly the Bhagavad Gita on the chariot, or we are Mr. Such and Such or Mrs. Such and Such now hearing the same Bhagavad Gita here in Heidelberg, in March of 2006, the same potency is there. The same potency is there. We shouldn't think, well, how can I mean, Arjuna, you know, he was there with Krishna, but I'm not, so I can't really, you know, I can't really surrender. If I had just been in the chariot there with Krishna and Arjuna, then I would surrender. But, you know, my excuse is that, you know, it's 5,000 years and, you know, thousands of miles away from the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So this is my excuse why I'm not surrendering. No. You have no excuse for not surrendering, because the full potency of the Bhagavad Gita is here in Prabhupada's books. The Srila Prabhupada has manifested in his preaching the full potency that was there when Krishna heard it directly, when Arjuna heard it directly from Krishna. There is no lacking in the potency. The only problem is the hearers. We hearers are not on the same caliber as Arjuna. Both things are there. The speaker has to be potent and the hearer. Just like when a man and a woman combine for having a child, they both have to be sexually potent. The husband has to be sexually potent, and the wife also must be sexually potent. And then there will be child. So, in the same way, the speaker, the guru, must be potent. He must be spiritually potent. And the hearer also must be spiritually potent. And if both of them are potent, then love of God will take birth within the heart of the disciple. It will manifest. So we have that potent spiritual master, his divine grace Srila Prabhupada. Now we have to be the potent hearers, the potent readers of his literatures, the potent followers of his teachings. And in this way, it is guaranteed the love of Godhead will manifest, will take birth within our hearts. Actually, it's already there, it's just within the shell of material consciousness, which is blocking us from tasting it. But it will come bursting out of that shell if our hearing is potent. Hearing is the most important thing. Therefore, it is listed first. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu. Hearing is the first item given by Prahlad Maharaj, the great Mahajana. Hearing is the first thing. First we hear. And then we must also then chant. If our hearing is potent, our chanting will be potent. If our hearing is not potent, our chanting will not be potent. So we have to learn how to hear. Be very, very serious about hearing. When the spiritual master, when we're hearing from the spiritual master, especially in all Vaishnavas, also, we're hearing the message of Krishna. Just like in our classes, sometimes I speak, you speak, we take turns actually in our temples. We give to every initiated devotee has an opportunity. Because it doesn't matter. Prabhupada told Rina Ananda Maharaj on the beach, he said, whether you speak or I speak, just like a sweet ball, you may bite it from this side or that side. So whether I speak or whether you speak, if we are purely presenting the message of Srila Prabhupada, then the potency is there. The liberating potency is there. So when any devotee, it could be our Guru Maharaj, another spiritual master, any devotee, woman devotee, man devotee, it doesn't matter. If someone is purely speaking the teachings of Krishna, we should be very eager to hear and absorb that mercy of Krishna, which is manifesting through their words. This was what qualified our Srila Prabhupada for getting initiated. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he explains it that way. course, he was already fully qualified. We know that as a pure devotee. But as a matter of transcendental pastime, Srila Prabhupada explained how Mukti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakura, he had come to Vrindavan and there was some parikrama going on and evening pravachan giving lectures. So this was regular program of going on, hearing and chanting. Now, for those of you who have been to Vrindavan, you know, just like here in Heidelberg, there's nightlife with the, you know, the nightclubs, cinemas, etc. People get off work and they go for the nightlife restaurant. So we know in Vrindavan there is also nightlife. How many have been to Vrindavan? Yes, so you know there is a nightlife in Vrindavan, but that is not nightclubs and theaters and cinema. That is called darshan. Everyone goes for darshan, especially our Krishna Balaram temple and some other temples are also very popular for darshan in the evening. So that is the nightlife in Vrindavan, darshan. So we know that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakura, he spoke in very erudite English. Very, you have to get out a big unabridged dictionary to follow what he's talking about sometimes, even if you're a native speaker of English. But to speak of someone who's not a native speaker, we have to get out a big dictionary. What's he saying anyway? The materialistic Deminar cannot possibly stretch to the transcendental autocrat, etc., etc. So he would speak in very exalted English, and in the evening time, that the evening time came, and he was giving some Krishna katha. But it was also the time for darshan in Vrindavan, evening time. And so there was a choice. You could stay and hear Guru Maharaj give pravachan, or you could go for darshan. So actually most of the disciples, they went for darshan. They didn't stay to hear Guru Maharaj speak. But Srila Prabhupada, Abhai Charan Day, he said, no, I will hear Guru Maharaj speak. Prabhupada said, I would understand or I would not understand, but I would go on hearing. Even Prabhupada with this, you know, his education at Scottish Church's College. And we see how expert Prabhupada is in English. I mean, reading Prabhupada's books also, I get out and I consult the dictionary from time to time. He is a very, very, very thorough English vocabulary, even though he's not a native speaker. So even, but Prabhupada said, I would understand, I would not understand. But I go on hearing. And he said, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, mark me that this boy likes to hear. So when it came time for discussion, shortly after that time, whether this Abhai Charan Day should be offered initiation or not, Bhakti Siddhanta, he said, yes, he likes to hear, therefore I will initiate him. So this is the actual qualification. This is how you attract the mercy of the spiritual master. You become very, very eager to hear his words. And the result is, if you hear nicely, because hearing is the foundation of all the other 8 activities of bhakti. If you hear nicely, as then Prabhupada also confirmed, he said, because I heard nicely, therefore I can speak nicely. So, if we hear nicely, we'll be able to speak nicely, we'll be able to remember nicely, we'll be able to serve nicely. All the 9 items of bhakti will unfold very nicely, progressively, step by step by step, if we can hear very nicely. Everything else will come. Just focus on quality hearing of the Hare Krishna mantra when you're chanting your rounds, of kirtan, when we're having kirtan. Whoever's giving class, be very, very eager to hear. Could be a god sister, it could be your spiritual master, it could be another ISKCON guru, it could be a sannyasi, it could be anyone. Anyone who is speaking according, strictly according to the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, That person, we should be very, very, very eager to hear from them, because that's how we will connect with Prabhupada. In a very solid, tangible way, we will connect with Srila Prabhupada, we will connect with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, we will connect with Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, with Bhakti Vinod Thakur, with Jagannath Das Babaji, etc., etc., Narottam Das, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the Six Goswamis, Lord Chaitanya, Ishvara Puri, Madhavendra Puri, and maybe out of order here, but you get the principle. Srila Vyasadeva, and ultimately with Krishna. So it all depends on quality hearing, potent hearing. By that potent hearing, the doorway to the spiritual world will open for you. Even while you're living in this material world, the doorway to the spiritual world will open for you. You will not see Heidelberg the same way anymore. If you hear potently the message of Krishna, the whole world will become enlightened for you. Prabhupada explains in the Nectar Devotion, Krishna consciousness is the switch that turns on the whole world. So one who is heard nicely, the whole, for him or her, the whole world becomes transformed. That person can begin more and more to see Krishna, experience Krishna, taste Krishna, to be connected with Krishna and everywhere, in all times, all places, and all circumstances. So, in such a state of consciousness, that formidable time which can vanquish the entire universe simply by the expansion of his eyebrows will not touch you. You will enter into the dimension of timelessness by quality hearing. Quality hearing will take you into the dimension of timelessness, where you go beyond your body, beyond your subtle body composed of mind, intelligence, and false ego. You can go completely beyond the 8 material elements, Bhumir, Rupo, Nalo, Vayu, Kang, Mano, Bhadari, Vasha, Ahankara, Iti, Yame, Bina, Prakriti, Rashtada. You can completely go beyond these material elements simply by quality hearing. So take advantage of this process, make your life successful, and time will have to spend his time going after the other people, not you. So, we thank you very much for your nicely receiving us here on our brief visit. I'm very happy to see how nicely you're serving Srila Prabhupada's mission here. We hope that we have been of some service to you. If we have, then our life is meaningful. If not, then our life is a failure. So we hope that we have been of some service to you while we have been here. And we can ask now if there's any question.
Mm-hmm. So you spoke of the importance of hearing and quality also, qualitatively. So what is our qualification to hear, you know, not just like snake holes, or like Jesus said that who has ears, he shall hear, you know, and how to increase the quality?
Well, one has to understand the necessity of hearing. One should be very enthusiastic. Enthusiasm is the real qualification for good hearing. One should be enthusiastic to hear, and that is based on understanding. If one understands that I have been suffering in this material world for innumerable lifetimes, adiatmic, adibodhic, adidaivic miseries, and now I have an opportunity to get out of all of my suffering, to get out of all this illusion, to get out of all of this anxiety. If one has that understanding, that is a very good qualification for hearing. If you understand, just like for example, just imagine you're in a, you're traveling somewhere and you're staying in a hotel, and you wake up to find that the entire, you're surrounded by flames. The hotel is on fire. You don't even know the room. You just woke up there. You don't know where the door is. You can't see anything. It's just a horrible nightmare. But then all of a sudden you hear this voice, a megaphone, saying, come here to the balcony. Come to the balcony. You can hear the megaphones coming from outside where the balcony is. Or it could be a smoke-filled room. In a dark smoke-filled room, the flames haven't come yet to your room. The point is, you're totally disoriented. You don't know where you are, how to get out, and you're in a death trap. The hotel is on fire. But you hear a voice on the megaphone saying, come here to the balcony. Follow the sound. Come to the balcony. Would you be enthusiastic to hear? You see? Would you feel some enthusiasm? Yes. Because that hearing will save your life. They say, okay, now come to the balcony. We have a net here. Even though it's pitch black, you can't see anything. They're saying, just jump from the balcony. We have a net here. We're going to catch you. It's safe. There's no problem. Just jump. So that, you're totally disoriented. All you know is you're a dead person, but if you follow the instruction that you're being told, then you will be saved. So you will naturally be very, very enthusiastic. Your eagerness, the intensity, your understanding of the absolute necessity is your qualification. So how to improve the quality of the hearing? That's very important. Sometimes we hear, but we sit there and start judging the speaker. Well, I can speak better than he can. I have envy. We start trying to tear apart the speaker. Well, he's not so realized, and he's not this, and he's not that. We just start, out of some spirit of envy, fault finding comes in, and we don't really, this blocks our ability to actually get any benefit from what we're hearing. We just start finding fault with the speaker. Well, he's proud, he's puffed up, and he doesn't really know the verses that well, and he's not really that sincere. He must have some, impure motivation for what he's doing. In this way, one could start finding fault with the speaker. I could give a much better class than what he's getting. I mean, he should really get off the Vyasasana and let me sit up there. In this way, one could start out of envy, trying to pick apart whoever's speaking. So we have to watch out for that tendency. We have to beat the mind down. If the mind starts finding fault with the speaker, we should understand this is envy taking over our mind. So we have to beat that down with intelligence. And understand, this person is speaking. If we've read Prabhupada's books and we know the philosophy, you see, then we can understand this person is speaking according to what Prabhupada said. So it's actually Prabhupada speaking. And this person is just, he's just an instrument for Prabhupada. That's true for any devotee, whether it's you, whether it's me, whether it's any devotee here, if they've read Prabhupada's books. And they're speaking honestly and sincerely according to Prabhupada's teachings. And it's actually Prabhupada speaking through them. Prabhupada is actually giving the class. Or you can say Bhakti Siddhanta, Bhakti Vinod. Ultimately, it's Krishna. So if someone starts speaking something bogus, and that has happened sometimes in our movement in the early days, then one should challenge them. If someone speaks something bogus, then you have a right to challenge what they're saying. It happened one time in our movement. There was four sannyasis that were traveling around, and they were saying that Prabhupada was God. And if you don't accept that he's God, you should just get out of the movement because you're not surrendered. You have to understand that he is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that didn't last long. That nonsense. But a devotee, in those days, sannyasa ashram was a new thing, and everyone thought they were as good as God, the sannyasis, so they started preaching that way. The devotees didn't know what to do. They were bewildered. They finally got together and had a meeting, and what should we do? They opened the books up and they started reading, you know, what's going on here? And then finally they got it together. And then they told Prabhupada, and Prabhupada wrote back a letter and said they can't preach in any of our temples. He banned them from the temples. So, not that we should blindly hear. We should know the philosophy by ourselves reading and understanding the books. But, as a general rule, I've been hearing classes for 35 years in our movement, and I'm seeing the devotees in our movement, when they give the class, they speak according to Prabhupada's teaching. That's the 99.9%. It's very rare that someone will say something bogus. If they do, then we should speak out against them. But we see that as a rule, devotees in the classes in our society, they're very nicely being given according to Prabhupada's books. So we have to understand that Prabhupada is actually speaking through the speaker. And therefore we should try to connect with Srila Prabhupada and all the acharyas when we hear the classes being given. And understand, this is an opportunity, as we've been saying in our previous lectures. We really have to strive for pure devotional service at every minute. Because, don't we have to be pure devotees in order to go back to Godhead? I mean, Prabhupada did say that in his books. The standard for going back to Godhead is to be completely free of material desires. So, can any of us guarantee we will live for 5 more minutes? Any one of us could drop dead in the next 5 minutes. So do you think it's worth trying to cultivate a mood of pure bhakti while we're hearing this class this morning? Think it might be to our advantage to do that? Just in case we die in the next 5 minutes? I mean, that's how we should think. You should understand that you have to cultivate a mood of complete pure bhakti, right now while you're hearing this play. Who is the great acharya of hearing? That is Parikshit Maharaj. He became perfect simply by hearing with absolute rapt attention the transcendental vibrations emanating from the lotus mouth of Sri Shukadeva Goswami. So now we're hearing, we can remember Parikshit Maharaj's mood of hearing. And try to hear with that mood of Parikshit Maharaj. That, and we can even pray to Parikshit. Since he is the great acharya of hearing, we can pray to him also. My dear Parikshit Maharaj, you are the acharya of perfect hearing of Shabda Brahma. Please bless me. Please give me your mercy that I can also develop perfect hearing. We can beg Parikshit Maharaj for his mercy in this way. So these are some tips on how you can develop quality hearing. It's the most important thing, to have quality hearing. If you do that, you know, everything else, if your hearing is qualitative, really qualitative, you see, then it will manifest in every other aspect of your life. How you speak, how you act, what your attitude is. It doesn't take great aptitude to become a pure devotee of Krishna. It simply takes the proper attitude. And that attitude is cultivated by submissive hearing. The quality of your hearing will shape your devotional attitude. You see, your attitude, whatever sort of attitude you carry around with the day, is simply a manifestation of your quality of your hearing. If you have poor quality hearing, you have a bad attitude. If you have good quality hearing, you have a very good attitude. If you have a perfect quality hearing, you have a perfect attitude. So we're molding our attitude by the way in which we hear. Especially this morning class is very potent for them. Like Prabhupada instituted it. When I joined the movement, this was not instituted, the formal Bhagavatam class, as we have now, with Jai Radha Madhava chanting the shloka. That was introduced after I joined the society. In those days, people were coming, you know, they were just crowding in. Like practically every day, you know, people were joining the temples. It was just thousands of people came pouring into the temples. And then Prabhupada said that, he said, if you keep adding, just like when you make burfi, you're cooking down the milk until it becomes very thick. Prabhupada said, if you keep adding more milk, then, you know, it will never become thick and sweet. So he said, you boil the milk until it becomes thick and sweet. So he said, whatever devotees that are there now, you train them very nicely. So he instituted the morning Bhagavatam class at that time. He saw we had so many members, but no one knew anything. There was no understanding of the philosophy, no proper understanding of the philosophy. There was plenty of enthusiasm, but there wasn't, you know, it was raw, pretty raw enthusiasm. No one really knew what was going on. Many people didn't know what was going on. It was like a cult. What separates Krishna consciousness from being a cult is quality hearing of the Vedic wisdom. That's the difference between Krishna, Hare Krishna movement and a cult. Cult means blind follower, you know, of some charismatic leader. That's a cult in the modern day use of the word. Of course, originally every religion was considered a cult. But the way they use it nowadays, it's taken on that new shade of meaning. So Krishna consciousness is not a cult because it is based on the scripture. We hear from persons not because of their charisma. We hear from them because they are purely presenting the scriptures. That's why we hear from them. So, we're almost out of time. Any other questions?
Is there a difference between reading Srila Prabhupada's books and hearing lecture?
Yes. Srila Prabhupada says there is a difference. And if you can read in his books where he says that hearing is actually better than reading. Of course, that doesn't mean we shouldn't read. The fact is that if we, by sitting like this, there's a principle which is now being very much touted in the corporate world, and that principle is called synergy. You may have heard that word, synergy. One plus one equals two, but when the principle of synergy comes in, it's one plus one equals three. In other words, I can read Bhagavatam on my own, and you can read Bhagavatam on your own, and we get a certain amount of benefit. So many units of benefit we derive when I read on my own and you read on your own. But if we come together, and you and I hear and discuss Bhagavatam between each other, then the benefit is much greater than if we do it alone. That is the principle of Sankirtan, congregational chanting. So, congregational chanting also means what? Congregational hearing. Unless we were all deaf. I mean, you know, we came together and chanted and we were all deaf, there would be no hearing. But because we do have the ability to hear, even though I'm partially deaf, I can still hear. We do have the ability to hear. Sankirtan means not only congregational chanting, but it also means congregational hearing. So the fact is that there's a great benefit to reading Prabhupada's books. That's why he told us to distribute them. In fact, he emphasized there's nothing more important than flooding the world with my books. Because anyone who just reads even one word of Prabhupada's books, their eternal destiny is transformed. But there's even more potency than that when we come together to read and discuss these books. The potency is even more powerful. I mean, there's unlimited power in reading it, and there's even more unlimited power when we come together and discuss. So the real bottom line is you must read the books and you must attend the classes both. And that way, when you're asked to give the, because you've read nicely and you've heard nicely, when it's your turn to give the class, you can give a powerful lecture. You see? A potent lecture that can, you know, inspire the entire audience. You see? So read with great seriousness, read every chance you get. And whenever you have a chance to attend class, hear a class, or to give a class, take it with great enthusiasm. Any other questions? Yes.
In your answer, you said that this urgent need, you know, to really cry for Krishna, is very important, you know, to realize in which situation we really are. You know, but how to come there practically, because we're so much, at least me, I'm so much covered with this material energy. You know,
what is she saying, David?
In my hearings, you say something? Hearings, you say that, I forgot something. Can you make it short so I can hear it?
Mm-hmm. Like, your husband, he spoke of the urgent need to
hear,
to realize our situation, you know?
Urgent need to realize our situation or existence in material world. So there is urgent need to realize that, so that we can improve our hearing.
Yes.
Yes, and how do we practically come to this point? You know,
how do you come to the point of urgency?
Yes.
Yes. Well, if you're not feeling urgent, you're asleep. If you're not feeling the urgency of taking complete shelter of Krishna right now, then you're off, you know, you're off in a dream world somewhere. And you're floating, your mind is out there floating around the clouds of illusion somewhere. You're not feeling a great sense of urgency that every minute, you've got a serious problem. You really do. You know. You're not, that means you're not really convinced of what Krishna is saying. Anyone who's not feeling a sense of urgency has not yet become convinced of the Bhagavad Gita. They haven't. They're not convinced. That means they're harboring so many doubts in the mind. Well, maybe. Maybe this is true. Maybe not. Maybe I'll continue doing this. Maybe I won't. Maybe something better will come along. And I won't do this anymore. I'll give up Krishna consciousness. Anyone who doesn't feel a sense of urgency is harboring many varieties of doubts. So, what one has to do is realize that if I don't feel a sense of urgency, then I must have many doubts in my heart about this Krishna consciousness philosophy. So I have to find some way to recognize those doubts and destroy those doubts. So you have to find out what are your doubts and how you can get rid of them. Why are you not feeling the sense of urgency? You have to become introspective. You have to study your own heart, study your own mind, and see what's there. Are you fully convinced of everything that is stated in the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam? If not, what are you not convinced of? And then you have to bring forward your questions to your spiritual master, to senior devotees, to any devotee who can help you. Even through prayer also, or by doing research in Prabhupada's books. I'm always researching the database when I have a question about something. I have it in my laptop. So we have to see, what am I doubting? What am I not convinced of? And then you have to try to find some way to destroy that doubt. Because these doubts are very serious obstacles. Arjuna had so many doubts. So what did he do? He addressed Krishna by the name Madhusudana for the purpose of emphasizing to Krishna that I want you to destroy my doubts. So even if you can't recognize your doubts, still you can pray to Krishna, please destroy these obstacles, these doubts, which are keeping me from having a total sense of urgency at every minute. Yes?
What to do when, like, I'm here because I read the Bhagavad Gita and I liked what I read, mm-hmm. but then the doubts you were talking about now, so yeah. I doubt that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God, because mm-hmm. he's blue and he has a flute, and sometimes he's a boar.
Because what?
He's blue.
He's
and
blue.
He has a flute, and sometimes he's a boar. Or
sometimes he's what?
Boy.
A boar.
He's a
boy.
Boy.
Boar.
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 Boar. Boar. Boar.
Oh. What is that now?
Sometimes he's what?
Like a boar?
A boar.
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 Oh,
like a boar.
Boar?
Boar.
Oh, boar. Yeah. So, Krishna is blue. So, let me ask you this question. What color, in your mind, what color would God have to be for you to be convinced that he was God? What color? Like you? Your color? A white? White skin? If he was white skin, then he could be God. What color? You're saying because he's blue, you're thinking, well, how can he be God because he's blue? He has a blue complexion. So what complexion would be more suitable for you? I'm just curious.
I think that the problem is not really the color. The problem is that I don't really want to accept that God has a form.
Ah, I knew you were impersonal. So, yes. So I have, it's quite simple, actually, to understand. I have some, because you're an intellectual, you know. I know the Israelis have a tendency to be rather intellectual, you know, philosophical, intellectual, not take things blindly. So, look at it philosophically. Just forget the scriptures, okay? Just look at the whole thing philosophically. Does something come out of nothing? You have an experience of something coming out of nothing, like these sweet balls you're making here. They just come out of nothing? No. Everything that exists comes from something, which came from something, which came from something, which came from something. If you go back to that original something that doesn't come from something, that's God. Now do you understand God? Yes. So, God is that original something from which everything has come. Now, some people say, well, that God is energy, or it. Or some people say that God is a person. So, what's the proper understanding? Is God a person, or is God just the impersonal, you know, energy out there somewhere? You say, so, let's look at it intelligently. Let's say every day, every morning after Mangal Arati, I gave you 1 kilo of pure gold. Would that make your day? Yeah. Every day I gave you 1 kilo of pure gold, you go, wow, Sankarshan Prabhu, where are you getting this gold? Javalya, this is amazing. I'm becoming the wealthiest woman in all of Germany because of this gold that you're giving me every day. Where are you getting this gold, Sankarshan Prabhu? Where are you getting it from? Your curiosity just, you know, after a couple of years of getting a kilo of gold every day, you're wondering, where are you getting this gold? And I say, well, I got a gold mine on the other side of the hill over there. Really? How much gold do you have in the gold mine? Oh, there's no gold in the gold mine. Now, come on, you're lying. There's got to be a huge amount of gold in that gold mine. If every day you're giving me 1 kilo of pure gold, is it? So, from that original, I'm not just telling this story to entertain you, there's a philosophical point to this, okay? So, there is that source from which everything is coming. So from that source, so many persons are coming. You're a person, you're a person, you're a person. So many persons have come from that original source. So do you mean to say that just as gold cannot come from a goldless gold mine, it must come from a gold mine that possesses gold. Similarly, persons cannot come out of imperson. You understand? You cannot bring a person out of impersonality. It's impossible. Just as it's impossible to get gold out of a goldless mine, it's impossible to get personality out of impersonality. Have you ever seen a rock that was personal?
A rock?
A rock that was personal? It said, "How are you doing today? You've been walking, you've been stepping on me every day. I just wondered how you were feeling today." You ever had a rock that became personal with you? No. Do you ever know any persons who were impersonal with you? Oh yes. Persons can be impersonal. That we have practical experience. But we've never seen that an imperson can be personal. So impersonality cannot manifest personality. It's impossible. So therefore, God, that original source, and even the scientists admit there's a source, aren't they? Even the atheistic scientists, they want to know what is the origin of the universe, isn't it? Everyone admits there's an origin. The theists admit there's an origin, and the atheists also want to know what is the origin. So that there is an origin, everyone agrees. We all agree there is an origin. So what is the nature of that origin? By simple philosophical analysis, we can understand that origin must, by its very nature of manifesting so much persons from itself, that origin must possess personality, and therefore why in the world are we calling it it? When it possesses personality, therefore we have to call it he or she. I'm talking philosophically now. That has to have he or she. Now whether it's he or she, that could be another debate. But actually, we've got that one solved already. We call it in Krishna consciousness. We call it she he, Radha Krishna. We call it Shihi. Radha Krishna, Sita Ram, Lakshmi Ram. So, that original source has personality. Now, who that person is, that's a whole other discussion. You know, we have to find out, are you the Supreme Person? Am I the Supreme Person? Is he the Supreme Person? You know, to find out, that's a whole other thing. Now, the great Muni, he helped us out. Parashura Muni. He helped us out to understand who the Supreme Person is. He said, that person who possesses such a great quantity of power, beauty, renunciation, knowledge, wealth, and fame that no one can equal or excel him or her. See, that is God. Parashara Muni has given us a test by which we can deduce who indeed is the Supreme. Power, beauty, renunciation, knowledge, wealth, and fame. So, if you want to be completely scientific about it, then you can do some research. You can study all the personalities of history, all the persons that exist in all places, all times and circumstances, and you can see who has more power, who has more beauty, who has more renunciation, who has more knowledge, who has more wealth, and who has more fame. You can do your study and see who you come up with. Be a scientist. You do the research and see who has it. Who has it? Well, the great sages have already done the research, if you're too lazy to do the research yourself. And they have deduced that it is one little blue cowherd boy. His name is Shyama Sundar Krishna. He is that Supreme Person. Now, if you can find someone else, you know, the sages will even accept your opinion. If you can find someone who has more power, more beauty, more renunciation, more knowledge, more wealth and fame than Krishna, the sages will then accept. If you can find a person who's more, has more of those qualifications than Krishna, then all those sages will accept your candidate for God. But all I can say is, if you think you can find someone else, good luck. Because these sages are actually perfect. They are called Tri-Kala-Gya. They have perfect knowledge of everything. They're self-realized souls. And they have understood that that Supreme Person is none other than Sri Krishna. Therefore we take Krishna, not blindly, but by, on the verdict of the greatest scientists, the greatest philosophers in the history of the universe. That's why we accept Krishna as God. Do you understand? So now do you accept that Krishna is God? Or do you still doubt?
I still doubt. I have one more question.
You still doubt, you have one more question. All right,
but
bring the stick.
I have a question for her. Did you follow first thing?
What?
What he explained, did you follow?
Yes, more or less.
More
I
or less.
Not, I could not say.
She did not follow you. What
well,
you
maybe we should give her, maybe she should give me a blank CD so I can give her a copy of the lecture so she can hear it again. She didn't follow everything.
Maybe
her. Yeah.
And then another question for her is, what is her evidence for God being impersonal? Now you have explained philosophically, so what would be her?
Yeah, you get. I'll give you the real bottom line. Okay, I'm a lover of truth. I really am. That's why I came to this movement, because no one gave the truth like Prabhupada. But I'll make this offer to you. This is a serious offer. If you can show me a higher truth than what Prabhupada has given, I will become your disciple. I'll accept you as my spiritual master. That's an honest deal. I'm telling you the truth. I'll become your disciple. I'll bow down at your feet and become your disciple. If you can show me a higher truth than what Srila Prabhupada has given, I'm still telling you with all seriousness, it's not a joke. If you can show me a higher knowledge than what Prabhupada has given, I'm your disciple. I surrender your lotus feet. See, if you
but
can show me a
I'm
higher
here.
Knowledge.
That's why I'm here, because I like Prabhupada's books, but still I have doubts. I'm sure everybody has. What can I do with this?
You have to work on those doubts. With all due respect to your good self. These doubts are. You have to work seriously to remove all these doubts. Not by artificially denying that they exist. But you have to deal with these doubts and understand that these are detrimental for your liberation from the cycle of birth and death. You have to honestly look at all these doubts, and you have to find someone that you can help you overcome these doubts. You see? You have to have a dialogue. You need to have an ongoing dialogue with some devotee that can help you overcome these doubts. Whatever doubts you have, you have to bring them out and have them all destroyed. Because they will eventually take you away from Krishna consciousness if you don't take care of them. Yes.
Yeah. What about the term that Krishna would manifest from inside and show the truth and crash these doubts? Because all in the traditional of Krishna consciousness, the big sages will be enlightened by Krishna himself at the end, and every doubt is gone.
Yes, actually, just by purification of consciousness,
yeah.
All the doubts go away automatically. I mean, you can, but. Study is one of the items of purification. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that By studying the Bhagavad Gita, you're worshipping me with your intelligence. So we can, there's many ways you can attack doubts. One is by prasadam, by taking prasadam also. How many of us were convinced to come to Krishna consciousness because of prasadam? Prabhupada said we all were. So there's different ways, but philosophical inquiry is also, it's actually a balanced diet. It's like in a meal, you have the rice, you have the dal, chapatis, pakoras, chutney, gulab jamuns, rasagula, malpura, We could go on and on here. Maybe throw in some cheesecake, You have a balanced diet. So, we overcome the doubts through a whole balanced program. One way is through philosophical inquiry and dialogue and discussion. One way is by quality chanting. One way is by bowing down before the deities. One way is by taking shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. There's so many different aspects to the process, and all of those aspects add together to a program which will eradicate all doubts from your heart and bring you to a state of complete feeling of urgency that I have no business to do at every second except can take complete shelter of Guru and Krishna. I have nothing else to do. So it's a balanced program. That's okay. Did I answer your question?
Yeah. Thank you.
So, anything else?
She can ask her question downstairs.
If she likes to continue, we can. If you want to have a doubt removal session, we can talk more. You can bring your doubts forward and we can talk more about a one-on-one session. If you want to do that, you're welcome. You have time in your schedule, we can have a meeting and we can help you. I've never been a blind follower myself, and I've philosophically defeated, I've philosophically analyzed it because I write also for people who are not members of ISKCON. I have a newsletter that goes out to thousands of people all over the world who are not blind followers of Prabhupada's books, are enlightened followers of Prabhupada's books. Also, a lot of them are completely new to it. So I have to convince them with intellectual arguments because they don't accept the authority of Scripture. And so I developed, over the last 3 years, I've been writing this newsletter, The Ultimate Self-Realization Course, and I developed a lot of philosophical arguments to defeat the, atheistic temperament of the heart. So we can talk more. So, we'll stop here. We thank you all very much for your nicely receiving us here, and we look forward to coming back again in the future. Shantarab Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai.